Hello, welcome to Greenlit with me, the voice which belongs to Toby Earle. In each episode of Greenlit, a guest receives the thrilling news their life is to be made into a biopic, and we discuss how that story will be told. Will they star? Which moments won't make it into the adaptation? And will King Kong make an appearance? In this episode, comedian Fatiha El Ghori will plot the course of this certain blockbuster. El Ghori has appeared on The Jonathan Ross Show, Comedy Central at the Edinburgh Fringe, Rod Gilbert's Growing Pains. She's in the new series of Dave's comedy survival series Outsiders, and her first solo show debuts in February 2023. She's also capable of time travel, and at the end of October, she travelled back a whole hour. Fatiha El Ghori, welcome to Greenlit.
Thank you for having me. I love that intro, especially the time travel. I thought that was great.
When did you first discover you could travel through time at extremely limited sort of periods of time at only certain points of the year?
I think 1981, that's when I was born. And I think that's the phenomenon. I can't even say that word. I can't say these big words, you know. I can't say phenomenon. I can't say king. I can't say sandwich.
You can't say king.
Because you're supposed to say it with a G, innit? And I can't. I go king, sandwich.
You just said sandwich, though.
I said it properly. Because usually I say sandwich. See, I take the G from the king and put it in the sandwich. I don't know what it is.
What would be the king of sandwiches? What would be a king witch? What would be?
Oh, Plowman's. That's my favourite. With mayonnaise. Yeah.
What? Any sandwich in the world, the Plowman's is the one.
Yeah, it's my favourite. But it has to be without tomatoes and with mayonnaise. Like, some of the shops do it without mayonnaise. That is psychotic. Who puts no mayonnaise in a Plowman's? Like, what are you doing? It has to have mayonnaise and no tomatoes.
So what's left? Just the cheese and the pickle?
The cheese, pickle and lettuce.
Right.
Granary bread as well. Oh, yum, yum, yum. That's my favourite.
Do you know what? I never would have thought a Plowman's would be anyone's go-to favourite, maybe apart from a Plowman. You know the Plowman's thing? I don't know if this is true, I think that was invented in order to encourage like cheese sales or something in the 50s. I don't think the Plowman's is a traditional, like, it hasn't existed, you know what I mean? Like in the 1500s, plowmen weren't stopping and getting out the Plowman's. I don't know if this is interesting. It just popped into my head.
No, it is interesting. And if they're there to sell cheese, then I'm sold, you know what I mean? Because I love cheese. I'm a little mouse. Cheese is my favorite. You know, like Christmas time and they have all the different cheeses. Oh, yeah. That's my favorite. I love the chive. Is it chive and onion?
Right.
I think it is. The double red Leicester or whatever it is. It's orange. It's like Leicester.
Yes.
And then it's got cheese and chive. That's my favorite. Did you see that thing that went like viral about that pub that was selling cheese and onion baps? Did you see that?
No, go on.
So it was like a bap and then a block of cheese. And I'm talking a block, like maybe as thick as your finger. And then just another thick block of onion.
Yes, I saw that picture. Raw onion, yeah. Wasn't it? It was like literally raw, yeah. Like a whole slice of raw onion, like a big thick.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I was like, hell no, because I don't like onion.
That picture, that cheese and onion bap that you mentioned, right, with that kind of thick slice of cheese and literally just... It was like half an onion, basically, wasn't it?
Yes.
Like raw. That was essentially British cuisine, wasn't it? Up until about, like, I don't know, maybe the late 90s.
Yeah, no, definitely. And my brother-in-law, he still does it now. He'll just peel an onion and bite it like an apple. I know. I've called the police loads of times. I'm like, this man's crazy. And he needs to be locked up. Like, why are you eating an onion like an apple? Are you mad? You know what I'm saying?
What? How long has he done that for?
Forever.
I would love to think that he did it once, right, as a joke, and he's then had to carry on doing it, right, but he actually hates it, and it's literally like he's got tears streaming down his face and he can't tolerate it, but it's his thing, so he just carries on doing it. He hates it.
Probably he's a psychopath, isn't he? Who does that?
Before we dive into the big questions though, the big questions, even bigger than cheese and eating onions like apples and whether or not that makes you a psychopath, the answer is yes. Is it pronounced biopic or biopic? when it comes to films?
I think it's biopic. Yeah, I think, but that does sound a bit like an alien film, isn't it? Like something out of Terminator, like here's your biopic arm or something like that, isn't it? Isn't it? Is that the right word? What is the word when it's
Bionic.
Like, oh, that's it, bionic. See, no, then no, they don't sound the same.
But that's
Oh,
amazing.
God.
I would love that. I would love that in a film if they went, here's your biopic arm. And the character's like, what? Like, do you mean bionic? Nope. Nope. Would you, when you're having these discussions about making your life into a film, would you have your meeting in the executive's office, or would you have it somewhere else? Would you have it at a restaurant? Would you have it in the film studios? Where would you have, it even in Hackney, where I believe you're from? Where would you have
Yes.
your meeting with these powerful executives to talk about turning your life into a film?
I'd probably do it at my mum's house. So then they would see how mental my family is. But make sure my brother-in-law with his onion is there, just so they get the feeling of what I had to live through and what I have to live through. So yeah, I would invite them to my mum. She would cook like all the lovely Moroccan food. So
Ooh.
She'd feed them properly. I remember once there was like a murder where we lived on our street. Yeah. And the police came and they had to interview everyone. And my mum's like giving them all this food. And they're like, please, can you just stop? She's like, no, this is very good for you. I have 25 spice here, spice one. And she's like, I'm like, what are you? The man wants to know if we murdered this person or not. Like, do you know, because they go around asking, they come in your house and they're like, do you have any tattoos? Where was you on this night? Did you see anything? Have you got any phone footage and all this kind of stuff? So they're asking you like serious questions. My mum's there like putting all this soup and like meat. And I'm like, oh my God. And I remember it was Ramadan. And she's like, I know we are fasting. You are not fasting. It's okay. You know, but that's why we're not eating. Please, it's no poison. Ha ha ha. I'm like, they're going to arrest us. They're going to arrest us. Like, what are you doing? So like, it was mental. So like that is the kind of thing she would do with these people. She's like, my daughter, very good, very, very good, you know, and all this kind of stuff. So they'd get a real insight into like my life.
I love the idea of offering food to a police officer going, it's not poison, haha.
Exactly. She's like, this is why we're not eating. It's no poison, I promise. Ha ha ha. I'm like, what are you doing? They were there for like an hour and they were eating as they ate some of the food and they were like, oh my God, this is so nice. She was like, don't worry, I have bag for you. Filling up, giving them good doggy bags. I'm like, oh my God. She's like a party or something, like, you know. So yeah, but the reason why they were there long, they had to ask her, because there was like me, my sister and her. So they had to ask us all like these, and I think my uncle was there or something. So they had to ask us all. They were like, "Oh, who are you?" Or well, he didn't live with us, but he was visiting. So that, who are you? Was you here on that day? Da da, and all that.
Wow.
But it was mad. Yeah, it was crazy.
What?
And they had to do the whole block, like everyone. So yeah.
Is do you have neighbours as welcoming and as friendly as your mum, or did they really luck out there?
Yeah, definitely lucked out. I would say for sure. Like my mum, yeah, she's like hospitality. The top, like, but I think that's a North African thing, you know, like this, that's what we're like. If the gas man comes, she cooks him like a three course meal. I'm like, he's only here for 1 minute. Like, what are you doing? She's like, no, I bleached the curtains. I got the meat from the man and da da da. I went traveled 25 miles to get this meat. I'm like, what are you doing? Have you lost your mind? So yeah, she's very like hospitable, and but I think it's a North African thing. Like we're just like that.
Like your coppers on a murder investigation, you end up with a carry out. How was your day? Very productive.
Yeah,
exactly. And delicious.
Exactly.
I mean, I think I'll be honest with you. I'm hoping your mum and your mum's house features a lot in the film. But exciting news, Fatiha, your life has been greenlit for a biopic. But how would your life be told by Hollywood or Bollywood or Nollywood? And what sort of creative control would you exercise in bringing the greatest story you know to the big screen? What's the film called, Fatiha? What's the film called?
I think I'd probably just call it my name. So I'd just be like, Fatiha. Or there's like, one time I did this comedy night, and it was like a comedy night, and then it was also like wrestling. We had like to do, yeah, I know, it was really odd, but it was fun. We had to do arm wrestling, that was it, arm wrestling. And then, but you had to do your comedy in between, and then you had to arm wrestle, and then the winner. Yeah, it was mad. It was mad. Honestly, I feel like I'm like, was I on drugs then? Did I lick a toad by accident? What's going on? But it was really fun. And then my friend helped me think of this name. He, because I'm Moroccan, so he said, between Morocco and a hard place. So like, that's
Nice.
a good one, isn't it? That's a nice one. So maybe something like that.
Can I ask you about this comedy night with arm wrestling? Who were you
Yes.
arm wrestling? The audience or other comedians?
No other comedians.
The purpose for this was what
I
did was it
don't.
decide the order or whose jokes were funnier or?
So there was two different things going on. Everyone performed, and then we did the arm wrestle, and then there was a winner at the end of the arm wrestle. I won, obviously. Like, hello. Like, I'm not gonna win.
You won the arm wrestling.
Yeah, I had to
Awesome.
win, otherwise I'd just smash everyone up if I didn't win. So they were like, okay, you won. Okay, I'm like, yeah, no.
What do you think was tighter on that night? Your tight 5 minutes or your tight 5 fingers in the arm wrestle?
Oh my God, five fingers. Because when you're doing it, you have to be careful not to hurt the other person and stuff. So like, yeah, I was like, let me not break this like 5 stone, 4 foot 1 person's arm, that kind of thing. Because my mum's not there to feed the police, innit? So I'm like, I will get done. So I was like, let me not do that. So yeah, I would say that because you had to look after someone else. You know what I mean? Like, also there was saying for the outsiders, we recorded these little clips with us and David doing stuff and saying stuff, and they've posted them on YouTube. And under one of the comments under my video with me and Phil and David, it called me a Cockney stacking doll. So maybe I know, and I'm like, that's the second time in my life that I've been called a babushka. So yeah, I was thinking maybe that a Cockney stacking doll.
Okay, so Phil Wang and David Mitchell, who you star alongside, get nothing comment wise.
Well, they get lovely comments. They're like, oh, David, you're a psychopath. We love you. And then it's like, Phil, you and your rice cooker are the best. Because he has a little rice cooker in the video. Because they ask us, what would you bring in with you
Right.
into? And then Phil brings a rice cooker. I brought tweezers because, hello, I'm a hairy bastard, innit? So I've got a main, you know what I mean? And stuff. But like, he brings a rice cooker. But,
I was thinking more tweezers. I was thinking, oh, very sensible splinters, trying to remove foreign objects in the woods because you're in the forests for outsiders where you're trying to, prove that you can survive in the outside. So tweezers, brilliant to remove things that get stuck somewhere, very sensible. But no, it's a beauty regime.
hell yes, I'm North African, innit? Like, it grows back within a day. It's like Groundhog Day every bloody morning. Yeah, so maybe that, maybe like Cockney stacking doll.
That feels like quite a mean thing to say. Is that not, that's quite mean. Is it, why have
Probably.
you been called a babushka in the past? Like
I don't know. I think it's because of the hijab. I don't know.
literally
So I
that.
used to work. Yeah, I used to work in a hospital, and it was a specialist hospital. This was years ago, and I was in like my 20s, and so you used to get people from all over the world come in there. All, sorry, not the world, the country,
Yeah.
come in there. You do with it. It did have a private section, but for the NHS one, it was just people from all over the country. And I remember we had this Irish family that were in with someone getting treated, and they said to me, firstly, they said to me, they were like, because I remember it was really cold, and they were like, oh, you must really struggle in this cold coming from further east and all. And I was like, listen, Hackney is a bit further east, but it ain't bloody Dubai, you pricks, you know. So that was that. And then he goes to me, oh, you look like a little babushka. And I was like, what the hell? And he asked me if I was Russian. That was another thing. I was like, obviously the wrong patient is getting treatment here. It needs to be you because you're mental, you know. So yeah, so that was the first time I've ever been called a babushka, and then the second time is this one. I guess it's the hijab. I know.
The thing is just
I find it quite amusing. I thought it was quite funny, but the comment didn't get any likes because it, like you said, it's a bit mean.
good. Good. Well, I tell you what though, I suppose, I think that what you suggested at the beginning, between Morocco and a hard place is great. And then merchandising, how about Cockney snacking dolls of Fatiha El Ghori? You could have, as part of the merchandise for the film, you could own it, maybe. You could own that.
Yes, that's a great idea.
How long did you work in the NHS for, or the hospital for?
So for the NHS, I probably worked in the NHS for about 10 years, but not in different places.
Right.
So I worked in a hospital, and then I worked in doctor surgery.
How did you find those 10 years?
I liked it because I liked helping people and stuff. So I enjoyed it, but it was it's a bit tough because even then you could see the cuts and all that, and not having enough beds and all that kind of stuff. So that was a bit tough, but it was nice to help people in your community and stuff like that. Because I used to work locally in Hackney.
Right.
So it's nice to help people and build relationships and stuff like that. Sometimes people would just come because they were lonely and stuff, you know. It wasn't necessarily because there was, but I guess that in itself is an ailment, obviously, you know. So, yeah, so that was nice. And then seeing kids grow up as well, like people having babies and then the kids get older and older. And I remember there was this family and they had three boys. And I used to say to the little one, it was so cute, and these really fat little cheeks. And every time I see him, I'm like, come here, I'm going to eat your cheeks. And he's standing in the hallway screaming, going, Mom, she's going to eat me. And the mum's like, don't be so ridiculous, get inside. And he's like, no. So, yeah, it was nice to see that and be part of the community for sure.
When did you stop working in the NHS or that sector?
Probably early 2000,
right?
I think so. Yeah, right. Not okay. That long.
I was wondering if you left the NHS and then you went straight into arm wrestling. I don't know. Was there any crossover there? Or was you went from saving people and helping people to potentially damaging people? Was there any crossover, or was that much later?
No, that was much later. When I did the arm wrestling, I was working in education, so I was working in a university. And obviously like doing comedy at the same time and stuff. So sometimes students would come in to drop off like the dissertations or whatever, and they'd call me from the desk and I'd go, come out, there's someone to give it in. And I go, okay. And I go out and then I go, hi, I'm Fatio, have you got something you want to give me? And then they're like, oh my god, I saw you yesterday in the club. I'm like, shut your mouth, give me that dissertation and get out. Like, everyone knew, because my colleagues would come and watch me and my management, all that. They all knew I did comedy. But like, it was just, you know, when you start to get recognized, I'm like, no, like trying to keep those two things separate and stuff. Because obviously you have to, when you do comedy, a lot of it for me is about things that I see or experience or live, feel, and things like that. Obviously I have boundaries, but when you're working in that environment, you have to be careful in terms of, you know, I can't tell a story that I think is funny, because if someone recognises that, I can get in trouble, blah, 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 all that. Yeah. Now, I don't work there no more, so all your stories are coming out, bitches. So for me, it was always like, what if somebody complains, or if someone hears me swearing on stage and then come and complain? And so that was always, I had to be careful in what I said a lot.
It sounds like they were very supportive, your colleagues, and even the students.
Yes, they were. They were very, I would get really nice messages. And then my colleagues would, sometimes they just turn up. They wouldn't tell me they're coming, and they just turn up. And it's a lot of pressure when it's people that you know in the audience. I'm like, oh, shit. Because it's a different, you know, because it's a different, you're a different, obviously the person that it is you on stage, but it's a different version of you, a version that they might have not seen.
Yeah,
and stuff. So it is really, you feel vulnerable, really. And then it's almost like, oh my god, what if they don't find you funny? Which is okay, but like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't mind, because I think obviously comedy is subjective, so not everybody's going to find you funny. Just don't be nasty.
Yeah,
otherwise you'll end up, you know, swallowing your teeth. Do you know what I'm saying? So that's the kind of person I am. So there's a vulnerability about it for sure.
Okay, so we've got the title of the film sorted, right? Between Maroc and a Hard Place.
Mm-hmm.
We've got some tales of how you came to be a comedian. So my next question, I'm wondering if that will in any way play into it. What's the opening scene of Between Maroc and a Hard Place?
Me stuck in an actual, in between a rock, between two rocks. So like the literal meaning of the film, Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah, I think that's what we should do. So I can be stuck in between two rocks and then be like, this is my life.
Are they your actual rocks? Like, what was it like James Franco in 127 Hours when he's stuck?
Yes.
Okay, what about being stuck between, can you be stuck between two Morocks?
Yeah, maybe we can get like two buff Moroccan men and I can be stuck in between. I'll be like, you didn't think it was going to be this kind of movie, did you? But it is. The only rocks in these movies are these abs.
I mean, how neatly navigated that particular metaphor. That is neat. I mean, why do you feel like you not to labour this too much? Do you feel like you are stuck between Morocco and a hard place? Do you feel like you are, because like you talk about your North African heritage and coming from Hackney? Is that how it feels?
Yes, it is. There is your identity. There is sometimes I feel like I don't belong in either. Because so like when I go to Morocco, so I speak the language fluently. I have family there. I visit there like twice a year.
May I ask what is the language spoken in Morocco? Is it Arabic or is it?
No, it's called dialect Moroccan. So in Morocco, we say Derija. So it's dialect. It's dialect. A dialect.
Okay, apologies for assuming there was some kind of Arabic.
No. We do speak like in schools. They teach them the classical Arabic and stuff, which other Arab countries will understand and can read and can understand. And if you talk to them like that, they'll understand it. But then we also have the dialect, and then we also have the Berber language as well.
Oh right.
So there's a mix. So there's not, don't worry, like you haven't, yeah. But we've got bits. So for example, if you're from, so we were colonized by the French and the Spanish. The north, we have a lot of these little Spanish words in our speech. And then central is French. And then again, south is Spanish.
And it's the same, like the in the French section, they would have French words in amongst the dialect.
Yes, we do have some people in Morocco born and raised there, because they were educated in private French schools. They don't speak the dialect. They only speak French, which is diabolical. And those kids, when I see them, I slap them. Because I'm like, what are you doing? How are you living in a country and you can't even speak the language? Are you mad? Like, so, yeah. So you do get that.
Wow. Mm. And sorry, I interrupt you because you're saying that you don't sometimes feel like you fit in when you go back to North Africa or when you go back to Morocco. Right?
Yes. Yeah, I do. I feel, because when I go there, they're like, oh, you're born, because they can tell from the way that I dress. Like, they can tell from my accent what part of Morocco I'm from as well. And but when I speak the dialect. But yeah, so when I go there, they're like, you're not really Moroccan because you wasn't born here. And then when I'm here, they're like, you're not English because you're Moroccan, you know. And I'm like, you're right, I'm not English, but I am British. This is my home and this is my identity. And, you know, you are going to swallow your whole teeth if you carry on with that shit. So, sometimes I feel I don't really belong. I don't really have a place. It's something I have to make for myself.
Is that something as you're continually working out? Have you found a way to tether yourself, or is it constant development? Is it?
Yeah, constantly working it out. Constantly, yeah. The only thing I guess that tethers me is my personality. That's what I'm like. This is who I am, and that's the only thing. But sometimes I do feel like, am I this? Am I that? What's going on? I am both of those things, but it's just sometimes it's hard to navigate.
What do you miss about, like, when you say go to Morocco, what do you miss about Britain and vice versa? Like when you're in Britain, what do you miss about Morocco? What are the things?
So it's really laid back in Morocco. Like the people work hard, but there's the quality of life and working balance is a lot better over there. Mm. And like family is really important over there, and the unit is still really close, whereas here it's different. So when I go over there, it's that kind of, that's what I enjoy the most, like family coming together, having meals together. You know, here, or even when I was, I'm not living with my mum now, but when I was, everybody would be eating at different times because of their work schedule. There, we always have breakfast together, lunch together, dinner together, and stuff like that. So there's that family thing. And then, yeah, just a lot more laid back, quality of life balance is better. And then here I miss, I guess, the freedom in terms of, because I don't, like over there, I never go out on my own. I'm always with my cousin because I don't know the place. Do you know what I mean? It's the same. I don't know the place, and I'm not a tourist. So yeah, but here, like, I know I can go out anytime I want. I know what I'm doing. I know where I'm going. There's certain foods as well that we eat here, you can't get over there. And I miss that as well because I'm a greedy cow, innit? But yeah. And then there are things over there that you can't get here. And then I miss them. And I'm like calling my cousin going, oh, wait, send me that packet of crisps. She's like, are you mad? I'm going to pay £45 a DHL to send you a packet of crisps. Are you lost your mind?
This is really, this is really important, Fatia. Tell me about the crisps.
Oh,
big crisp following here. So what crisps are we being denied in the UK that we should be able to purchase in Morocco?
So they're like these Cheetos and they're like, you can
convinced.
Get them here.
So far, I'm not convinced. You just said Cheetos. I'm not convinced.
Yeah. You can get them here, but they're so expensive. You can get them here. If you go to, you know, those American candy stores in the West End? Yeah, that honestly, I've been in there and I'm like, no, I'm not paying £10 for a bag. You're mad.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing that. So they're like these Cheetos and they're like tomato flavors and they're like long. They're like maize. Is it maize? Do you know the salt and vinegar sticks?
Uh-huh. Yep.
They're right. Like that, but they're cheap, but they're tomato, like tomato ketchup flavor. They're so good. And they get stuck in your teeth and everything. I love them. I really do. My auntie always moans when I get them. She's like, well, they're getting stuck in my dentures. I'm like, why are you chewing them? Just suck them then, innit? And then so we go on a like mad one. Yeah. And then there's like, obviously you've got like the Moroccan sweets that we have. So like there's something that we call like a kaab el ghazal, which is, it means the gazelle's horns.
Okay.
They look like a gazelle's horns. And they're really nice. They've got like inside, they've got like almonds, but not marzipan. I hate marzipan. Yeah. Yuck, it's disgusting.
Yeah, not with you. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, ugh, hate it. But yes, so they've got like marzipan inside, like rose water. They're so nice. Ooh. And we've got this other sweet. Yeah, they're so nice. And then these other sweets, they've got like dates inside them. The dates are mashed up. And then the dates inside. And then you've got pastry rolled over it. Oh my God, it's so nice. And then everything's so much more affordable as well.
Yeah, it doesn't, I mean, yeah, £10 for a packet of crisps in the UK, I mean, that really doesn't say much about, I mean, cost of living crisis. I mean, hello.
Exactly.
Hello. Exactly. We've got the opening scene, you between a pair of Moroccan hunks with the abs out. Maybe a hard place is written on the second Moroccan hunks underwear. I don't know. Is that too much?
We can have with an arrow pointing down.
it's a metaphor, but it's also a great visual a piece of cinema, I think. But who Fatiha is going to be cast as you? Who would be cast in the lead of Between Morocco and a Hard Place?
Can I just be the cast, or does it have to be an actor?
If you want to be in it, it doesn't have to be an actor. If you want to be in it, you can be in it.
Yeah, I think I should be in it. I mean, I was going to say like maybe Melissa McCarthy, because I really like her. She's really funny. Also, she's a little bit of a larger lady. She's voluptuous.
Right.
She's not, yeah, whereas I'm just big. So there's a difference. There's a difference. But yeah, I don't, yeah, but her wearing a hijab and all that, because the hijab has to be in it.
Yeah.
That is my identity.
Yeah.
So, and but she's got lovely hair, so I wouldn't want to ruin her hair. So it's probably best if I'm just in it. Yeah. And then I'd have to teach her to wear hijab. I ain't got time for that shit. So yeah. And so I would probably be in it myself.
She can
be the understudy if I'm sick.
What about like, what about like a sort of meta aspect where she was also playing you and you're teaching her how to play you in another film version, maybe? Like it's a kind of meta sort of biopic, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
On the phone going, oh God, how do I do this hijab? And you're like, oh, bloody hell, Melissa. And you have to get in the car and drive around and teach her how to do a hijab.
Yeah.
What about, how tricky is it to fix a hijab? Is that the technical term, fix a hijab? How would you just, is that the right way of describing it?
Yeah, hijab. So yeah, there's loads of different styles. It just depends on what you like. Some people do it, some, like I wear a cap underneath mine to hold the hijab in place, and then I put the hijab on, and then I use like clips rather than, because some people use what's it called, like I was gonna say pins. Needles, it's not, yeah, that's it, pins. So some people use pins. And I remember once I was working in doctor surgery and this woman came in and she's like, "Can you help me?" And I was like, "Yeah, of course, what's wrong?" She's like, "I think I swallowed my hijab pin." I was like, "Girl,
Oh my
yeah."
God.
And we were like, "Can you feel it?" And she's like, "Yeah, I can feel it in my throat." They said, "We have to send her to hospital." Yeah. But when she went to hospital, they couldn't find it. So it might have been, she had a scan and everything. And I remember she came back and told us. But like, I don't, maybe she didn't swallow it. Maybe she thought she did and it dropped up. But I don't use pins because number one, they mash up your material. And number two, that's the kind of shit I would do. I'd accidentally eat one. That I would totally, or stick it in my eye or some stupid shit like that. Or I would just poke myself all the time. I know I would. Like, I'm just, yeah, a bit clumsy like that.
Are you clum? Are you, I was going to ask. Are you? Do you feel like you're clumsy?
Sometimes I can be like, I do stupid, like I'll cut a pear and then I'll try to eat off the knife and then like accidentally stab myself across the face. One time I was using, I'm so stupid, I was using, you know, like a sharp knife, the knife that you use to cut through or like to cut cheese or something like that. I was using it for spread and then I lick the knife and then I was like, "Oh, I can taste metal," and I'd cut my whole tongue. A massive line going down the middle of my tongue. I was like, and I told my mum, and she's like, "You greedy, this is why you greedy." And I'm like, so yeah, so sometimes I do things like that without really thinking, like, oh shit.
Like you mentioned that lady coming into the doctor surgery. You must have seen a few things then working in a doctor surgery
Yeah.
where people come in with stories or ailments. Have you
Yes.
seen some ones which you might be able to sort of laugh about now, but might actually also be quite traumatic?
Well, this guy come in once. He was an older guy, and he goes, "I've got chest pains." And I said, "Okay, don't worry, we're going to get the doctor to see you." And he goes, "I don't want to die, and I don't know what was." Sometimes I'm dumb, okay, stupid. So I turned to him. I was like, "Oh, we're all going to die. Don't worry." And he was like, "What the fuck?" Yeah. And the other receptionists were like, "You're going to get a complaint." And I'm like, you know, like I said it. And then I was like, "Oh, you're such an idiot. Like, who says that?" Because I'm a very calming person. You know, like if someone's like, "I don't feel well," I'm like, "Look at me. Just look in my eyes. We're going to breathe. Don't worry." You know, like I'll proper help you calm down and stuff like that. But I don't know what happened that day. I just lost my mind.
I love the idea. This guy thinking he's having a heart attack, and you're giving him some kind of
Yeah,
existential life advice.
exactly. And thankfully, he was okay. It was muscular, so thank God there was nothing wrong with him. But I was like, "Lord," and I remember once it was snowing, and this lady came in. She was heavily pregnant, and she goes, "I think I'm in labor." And I said to her, she's like, "I'm really scared. It's snowing. I'm struggling to get home and all this." I was like, "Don't worry, darling. You can have the baby here. You're in good hands." And she was like. Like it's our first child. I'm like, "Don't worry, darling. Just put your feet up behind Mr. Khan sitting there and we'll get that baby out." And she was like, "What the fuck?" So yeah, it was, yeah, but she wasn't in labor, thank God. And she did have the baby safely afterwards in the hospital, but she wasn't in labor then. But yeah, so sometimes I do, I'm like, "Why are you saying something's coming out of my mouth?" And I'm like, "Why are you saying that? Why?"
You say you're a calm person. Like, have you always been calm? And is that not a good thing to be like if you work at a doctor's reception? Have you always been
Yeah, for
calm and
sure.
sort of like level-headed?
No, I just yeah. I'm calm and level-headed in some things, and then so I have a bit of a temper, and I can get angry really quickly. But at the same time, if I see somebody that's in distress, my kind of maternal stuff kicks in. I'm like, I've got to look after them, because I always think, because there's been times where I've been like sick in the street, or one time I fainted in the street. Yeah, can you believe it was tonsillitis? I fainted. Yeah, I
What?
know. I don't know what it was. I think I had tonsillitis and it was hot, and I didn't know I had tonsillitis, but I wasn't feeling well, and I hadn't drunk that day. And then, yeah, and I just fainted in the street. And
Yikes.
I was, yeah, it was awful. So I always think, so in any situation like that, I always think, how would I like to be helped? So whenever I see someone in distress, so I'm like that annoying old woman sometimes. You know, like at a bus stop, if I see someone looking at the thing, I'm like, "You all right? Do you need some help?" Stuff like that. So yeah, I just like helping people.
In terms of a, you know, this biopic, in terms of the story you could tell, I'm sensing some pretty exciting rescues. They may be based upon real life stories, or they may be entirely fictional, but there could be some really exciting tales of rescue. Have you ever had an exciting tale of rescue, or would you need to maybe sort of magic one up?
Well, there was one time when I was that when we moved to a new house, I was a teenager. I was in my school uniform, and I came home. We finished school, came out, and my mum wasn't home. So I was putting my hand through the letterbox trying to open the door. And then, like, these fucking police turn up. And I'm like, what the hell? And they're like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I'm trying to get in my house. They're like, yeah, we heard that before, darling. I'm like, listen, yeah, this is my... And they're like, what you got in your bag? I'm like, science books. And all and they were like, honestly, I was in school uniform. And they're like, do you live here? We don't... No, they were like, we don't believe you live here. Because we used to have this neighbour that was so nosy that would just report you for anything. Like if you threw the bin down the chute, the chute bin, if you threw your rubbish down the chute bin and a little bit of the plastic was still sticking out, she fucking called council. And honestly, she was such a cowbag. But anyway, honestly, so yeah, so then they were like going to arrest me. They're like, turn around, we're going to cuff you. And I'm like, what? And then my mum's like, and then I hear my mum go, Fatiha, what is this, Fatiha? And then my mum come back and they were like, oh, is this your daughter? Do you live here? And she was like, yeah. She opened the door with the key so they knew. And then so then they let me go. And then she was like, oh, please just take her just for maybe 1-2 hours. She's very naughty. Please take her, scare her, maybe hit her a little bit. And yeah, my mom, honestly, my mom come up to school once in primary school. She told the teacher to hit me, and I was like, what?
You've just been wrongfully detained by the police, and she's encouraging them to stick you in a cell for a couple of hours and rough you up.
Exactly. She's like, yeah, please, 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 it would be very good if you help, please. I give you 10 litres of soup and... 5 baby chickens, you know, like bartering with them with food.
Soup for brutality. I don't think I've ever heard of an exchange system before. So what? Hang on. How old were you when the coppers just like decided that you were suspicious?
Like 13 or something like that. I was young.
13.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I was in a school uniform and stuff, and I just couldn't. And thank God she'd come. Otherwise, bloody hell, like I think they would have like taken me.
And the thing is, as well, like you know. They would have gone through, you said science books in your bag. Like, oh, yeah, what you think they're making? What you think they're making?
Exactly. Exactly.
I like your mum. Your mum seems to be quite friendly with coppers. She quite likes authority figures by the sounds of things.
Yeah, because in Morocco, you know, like the police don't mess about and stuff, and you respect the police. They have an authority. We don't have that. We used to have that here in the UK, but we don't. I remember like being young and everyone used to know the local police officer and he'd always see you be like, morning and all that. And
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? If the kids were messing about, he'd come and everyone would behave and stuff like that. So, but you don't have that now. And I know things have changed. There's loads of issues why, but in Morocco, there still is that people are scared of the police and
yeah. Yeah, no. I'm not. I'm assuming not much in the way of soup or chickens given over for
no.
a bit of light brutality.
They're like, listen, I've got a wife at home. She makes better chicken than that. You've got to give me something else. Got to give me something else, darling. Oh, I know.
Oh man,
that's when I start taking my gold rings off. I'm like, okay, here you go. Oh yeah.
So, what genre would the film be then? Between Morocco and a Hard Place, Fatiha, and what sort of budget do you think it would have?
So it would be a action comedy.
Brilliant.
So it'd be a bit like Rush Hour. Rush Hour is one of my favourite films, the first one.
Yeah.
So it'd be a bit like that, Rush Hour action comedy, and I would get to kick people's asses all over the gaff. Like, yeah, it would just be like, we're going to a cafe, I'd be like, can I have a Plowman's? They'd be like, it don't have mayonnaise. I'd be like, what? Bang, straight in their face. And then, you know, like, and then we go to another cafe and then they're like, we have to put Blamans in there because she's really tough. We have to put mayonnaise in there because she's really tough, not Blamans.
You love those kind of action comedies. Is that one of your favourite genres, maybe?
Yeah, I like action comedy, but I also like romantic comedy. So like The Wedding Singer is one of my favorite films
Right,
as well. But I also like other, so I like musicals. So I like Sweet Charity and like Singing in the Rain. So yeah, I like loads of stuff. I don't, but yeah, for our film, it should
Action
be
comedy.
action comedy.
So that begs the question then, of course, you rush out, you cite Rush Hour as a potential inspiration. Jackie Chan, Chris Tucker. So who would be your, like, if it's a buddy action comedy, would you have a buddy, and who would that buddy be? Would it be Melissa McCarthy playing you, or would it be someone else?
So I think I would play myself, and then maybe we could get somebody else. Yeah, like you said, someone else. Maybe Melissa McCarthy,
Let's have Melissa
actually. We could get
McCarthy.
her. Yeah, let's have a duo. We could be a duo. Have you seen The Heat
I'm
with
aware
her and
of it,
Sandra
yes.
Bullock? It's so good. You should watch it. It's really, really good.
I think it's on my li I've
So,
got it recorded, ready to watch. Yeah. Is it good?
okay. Yeah, it's really good. They make such a good couple in it. So something like that. Have you seen Tango and Cash? That's another one of my favorites. Obviously.
Never in my days did I think today I'd be discussing Tango and Cash. What a film.
My favorite. I think Kurt Russell is the bollocks in that. I love him. I love him. That's one of my favorite films ever. You're gonna get FUBAR,
How did you discover
man.
Tango and Cash? What was how did was did a friend give a video, or to get it off video off a TV or something?
I don't know. I can't remember. I just remember watching it. It was probably definitely on TV because it's an old film, isn't it? And
Yeah, late 80s.
like I was born in 81, so I was too young to watch it back then. But like after, yeah.
Trying to think when it was. I'm just having to Google when it was released. I would like to say it's late 80s. Maybe it's even 91 or something like that. 89. There you go. 1989. Oh my goodness me! What a name drop. That film is, it's so over the top. It's hilarious. And in that, of course, you've got the bad guy played by, I think it's Jack Palance, who's the bad guy, right? So every action comedy has a like a good villain. Can you think of a villain for you? Would you have a villain in your film that you're trying to take down? Is there an actor you would like to play a villain, or?
I think we should have Daniel Craig
Oh, what a bit of
as a
casting.
bit. Have you seen the Knives Out? Is it called
Yes.
Knives Out or them?
Knives
That's
Out.
so good.
Yep.
But because I remember him, I remember the first time I saw Daniel Craig, he was in a TV drama, and it was about these flatmates, and he was an evil prick in it. And he was honestly, he was like playing them against each other. He just ruined this friendship group. He destroyed them from the inside. And
Which one? Was
I
that not
can't
Our
remember
Friends
what
in
it
the
was
North, was
called.
it?
No, I don't think so.
I'm intrigued
I
to
don't
know
think
now what this
so.
one. But you, because
Yeah,
yeah,
he
Knives
was.
Out, he looks like he's having fun for the first time in about 15 years.
Yes. And he puts on the accent. And you know, like sometimes I think, oh, do you know who else is a good evil actor as well? I just thought James McAvoy. Have you seen
Yes.
Split?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
He's
Yeah.
wild. He is wild. Like, honestly, like, I love him. He's so good. But yeah, like, no, because I'm thinking, like, yeah, Daniel, because he does really well in Knives Out. He does an accent. And it's sometimes when British people do accents, it doesn't work out. It doesn't
Yep.
work. But
Yep.
his was good, especially the southern, so southern
Lovely. Yeah.
drawl.
Oh,
Yeah, so him.
this is
I
good.
think
And
him.
this is going to be a good high budget action comedy. And I'm just wondering what parts of your life would have to be in between Morocco and a Hard Place, and why? Why would those bits be in the movie?
So the bit we would have to put in is, well, so although I was born here, I didn't start speaking English till I was about six, probably.
Right.
Because my dad used to say to us, like, you need to speak Moroccan, the dialect when we're at home, and inside you're Moroccan Muslim and outside you're British Muslim. So you are British, because he was trying to maintain our culture and tradition, but at the same time, this is part of your identity as well. You are British. And this is our home. So, like, I remember going to nursery, and then the nursery teacher, like, speaking. This is the first day, and then she said something, and I looked up at her, and I looked up at my mum, and I said, "Mum, she doesn't talk like us." And my mum was like, "This is not our country. Like, as in, we're not from here. We're not indigenous." Even though,
Wow.
when I know that's problematic because there's
Wow.
lots of people that are not
Yeah.
indigenous and stuff. But and I was like, "What?" And it was really tough growing up. Like in the classroom, it wasn't very mixed. the school, you know, with the other students and stuff like that. There was only like five maybe ethnic kids in a class of 30, and because we were different, they let us know that they knew we was different.
Wow.
So it was tough, but that, yeah, it was I used to get into lots of fights, get sent home a lot and stuff like that.
Is that because of bullying? Because of bullying from other children?
Yes, yeah, definitely. So I think that, because that's where my toughness, I think, comes from. And, you know, like not taking any shit and that kind of thing. That's where that comes from. So then you get, so I think that would have to be in it.
Yeah. Did it get better over the years, or did it continue? And you just better, you were better equipped to deal with it? Or as much as you can be, you know, as much as you can be.
I think unfortunately what happens is you get used to it. It becomes a normal behavior, something that you're, even now I get exposed to it, even still now.
Yeah.
And stuff like racism, bullying, whatever. Like bullying is something, because those young bullies grow up into big bullies sometimes, you know.
Yeah.
Or some people become bullies later on or whatever. So yeah, it's still, I don't know, I guess. I just got used to it, but I just stuck up for myself when I could. But it was tough. But that is a huge part of my life, because, like I said, now I'm like a bad bitch. I'm like Beyonce. I'm one of Beyonce's songs. That's why.
She can do the soundtrack. Bayo can do the soundtrack.
Yeah, exactly.
So when, like now, as a comedian, are you're still encountering this kind of prejudice? Regularly, is it regular, or is it?
Yeah, I would say definitely. Sometimes you can get it when you're on stage. Sometimes you can get it from the other comedians. So yeah,
what?
Yeah. Trust me.
What, in the green room?
Yes. Yeah. So I've had incidents recent, and people chat shit and stuff like that. Yeah, and it's difficult because, like, say, like, for example, me and you now talking, it's the first time we've met and stuff like that. If you were to kind of like throw something at me, racist or you know, some misogynist or something like that, I might not be able to react, and because I'm trying to, I'm like, is this guy for real? Like, I don't even know you, and you're going to say that, like, so it takes you back, because I'm comfortable because we're chatting and that, and then you throw that in and I'm like, what the hell? So I can't always react in the way that I'd want.
Yeah,
you know, and then that makes you feel shit. So yeah, it's difficult. So sometimes I have to tell myself to always be on guard, just always be ready that someone could say something inappropriate, and then you have to react, you know.
I mean, it's inexcusable to have it from an audience, right? It's inexcusable, yeah. Full stop. It might happen. It's inexcusable, but it might happen from the audience. But for it to happen backstage with someone you're literally working with there and then, does that mean that you like, has that affected you, like, before you go out on stage in terms of, like, your performance that night? Because if someone says that kind of thing to you beforehand, that must affect you.
Yeah, well, what I do is I have this thing. I just put blinkers on. So I'm like, my purpose. So like, if they do it before I go on, then I'm like, my purpose is to make those people laugh outside. And it's a huge stress because I have to process what they just said. What am I going to do? How do I feel about it? Why are they saying that? And then I have to make a room full of 200 people laugh, for example. Do you know what I mean? So, like, I have to, what's that word?
Compartmentalize.
That's it. Thank you for helping me with my English. So I have to do that, put it away, and then do my stuff on stage, and then come back and deal with it when I finish. But it is, you know, because I just, when I'm at a gig, I'm like, my sole purpose is to make these people laugh, and that's what I have to do no matter what.
And
so, yeah.
So then, does that then mean, like, are there venues you don't play because of experiences, and are there bills that you don't go on because you've had experiences with some people who are on the same bill, and you'd rather just stay away from their microaggressions or their overt racism?
Yeah. Well, there's certain venues I won't do, and there's certain people I will not perform with, because I'm not. This is my job and I enjoy it. I love it. And I need to always enjoy it and love it. I am not going to put myself in a situation where I kick your ass and lose everything. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is the problem for me. The problem is that I'm going to end up smashing you up. And that's what I don't want to do.
And they haven't. It's not like they've even given you a Plowman's without any mayonnaise. It's like they've been really, really cruel and racist. I mean, that's...
Yeah. Exactly. And it's heartbreaking, because then you complain about it, but then you see them still being booked or whatever, and you're like, so then, yeah, it's just,
wow.
Oh, yeah. So then I'm like, okay, then if you're not, I have to remove myself, because I'm not going to do that. So it's not fair, but sometimes you feel like the responsibility is with you as the performer. And I'm like, it's not. It's with you as the venue. I've told you what this person's like. You know, you are a place of work and you should be protecting the people that are performing for you. Do you know what I mean? And, and stuff like that. Like, it's difficult. Yeah, it's a difficult situation. You know, people think it's just comedy. Ha ha, he he. I'm like, no, there's a lot that goes on.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, it's a tough business, but then you have this layered on top and then that makes it even harder.
For sure. It is.
To sort of look at it in a look at the job in a positive way. Where is your favorite place to play? Where do you love playing? Where what are the rooms that just bring you joy and always receptive and always really receptive?
I don't know. I just get, it's the audience that makes you. The way I see it, I can do a gig to 5 people or 500 people, but they make you. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. They're the ones that create. So it doesn't matter where the venue is. It's, I don't know. It's just a connection that I have with the audience.
Sure.
And sometimes I get other comedians messaging me and going, oh, how did you get on that night? Or can you get me on this night? Or can you? And I'm like, because everybody wants to play a big room. And I'm like, it's not always about the big room. You know what I mean? It's like, you learn a lot when you're doing it to like 10 people as opposed to 100 or whatever. Yeah. There's a lot. Because when you're doing it to 10, you have to work a lot harder. Because if I'm doing it to 100, if 25 of them laugh, I've won the gig. Do you know what I mean? If I'm doing it to 10 and 2 laugh, that is bollocks. Like, you know what I mean? I'm dying, bro. I'm dying on my ass. Like, so, and sometimes I have mad gigs. Like, I'll go on and they're like, okay, you're doing 20. I'm like, okay, I get there. And then these fuckers ain't laughing. I'm like, I'm not doing 20. I do like 10 and then I bounce. I'm like, and they're like, Fatia, and I'm like, I'm out the door, goodbye. Got to go and pray, sorry. And you're like, walk.
What an amazing deployment of an excuse like that.
So yeah, for me, I don't really have a favorite stage. I just have, obviously, like, I love doing things that are in Hackney because that's my town. That's mine. Those are always, I feel a lot of pressure if I'm doing those kind of gigs because it's for where I'm from. Yeah. If I'm doing like anything in East, like Hackney, Bethnal Green, Tower Hamlet, so anywhere like that, it's a lot of pressure because they're mine. But yeah, and then like one of my favourite places was Hackney Empire, which I've done twice as part of other gigs, not my own stuff or anything like that. And because I remember going there as a child, going to watch things and stuff like, and then being on the other side is crazy. It's crazy. I'm like, what's going on? What is happening here? So, those are really nice, that gig.
Well, the Hackney Empire sounds like it's definitely featuring in the film, but which moments from your life would you want on the cutting room floor? Which moments won't be making it into Between a Rock and a Hard Place, the final edit?
The struggle, I guess. Getting here and like, you know, before I used to work like 5 days a week and then gig like 5-6 nights a week.
Wow.
And it's like, yeah. And my work like never suffered. I never had a complaint, never missed a deadline and stuff like that. I think that maybe, because it's a bit sad, isn't it? Like the struggle, I guess. Wow. Is it? I've worked really, really hard to get to where I am like now. So I've busted my ass. So
It's like you say the struggle, like maybe you don't want to sort of think about it too much, but then that's kind of made you, right? In some ways, that's kind of made you who you are on stage and who you are a little bit now, maybe.
100%. All those tough gigs that you have that you leave and you want to cry and give up comedy and stuff like that, they make you what you are like now. Like you said, you build character from that. You learn a lot. Sometimes the audience make you work so fucking hard for the laughs. And I tell them, I'm like, why are you being pricked? Why are you making me sweat for this, bruv?
Don't start yet.
I do. I'm like, don't fucking start yet. I swear to God, I'll come in the audience. And they're like, oh my God. Honestly. And sometimes I'm like, do you lot know how to laugh? Because like, I'm really not seeing it. Like, what is going on here? And then, so I just start on them and then they laugh.
Do you often have audience members come up to you after the gig to speak to you and sort of like say hello or
yes, it's nice. It's overwhelming because I'm like, I'm just me, I'm this little old fatty. I still go to like Sainsbury's with my trolley, like my little grandma trolley, like filling up with like water and tin cans and whatever. Like, do you know what I mean? And people come up to you and they're like, excuse me, you blah, blah. I'm like, yeah. I was getting off the bus the other day and the bus driver opened doors, like, excuse me. And I'm like, oh, what's this prick want? And then he's like, and I turn around, I give him this dirty, like, look, like, what? That kind of thing. And then he was like, are you a comedian? And I said, yeah. And he goes, oh, okay. And just shut the door and drove off. I'm like, what? So yeah, you get those, like, it's nice. And then you get those people that come up, like, this was a genuine story. Like, this woman, I was gigging in Cambridge. She comes up to me, she's like, can I just say that you doing stand-up comedy makes Muslims seem less scary? And she was honestly, and she was smiling from ear to ear. And I said to her, oh, okay. I said, thank you. I said, why don't you come with me? I've got something in my bag for you, my science bag. You know, it's trying to scare her. But yeah, so and it's nice. And then also the other side of that is that, like, I've done gigs where like 12 hijabis have turned up, and it was in a bar, you know, and they wouldn't usually frequent those kind of
Right.
places.
Yeah.
But because you're there, because they can relate to your voice, because there's representation, they, you know, because I don't feel welcome in a lot of places, not like, obviously bars, because I don't drink. I feel every time I go to a gig and it's in a bar, I have to have a little pep talk to myself outside to this day. Do you know, like, I'm doing a gig tomorrow in a bar. To this day, I'm gonna have to like give myself a little pep talk, you know, before I go in. I'm like, Fatiha, people are gonna stare. Don't worry, people are gonna look at you. It's only because this is an unusual thing. People, like, they look like you don't come into places like this. You know what I mean? That kind of, even restaurants, sometimes I'm like, I don't feel comfortable, not because of alcohol or whatever. It's just the way people look at you and like, what's she doing here? And I don't like that shit. Will get my temper from 0 to 1,000 in a heartbeat. You know, I don't like that kind of shit. That kind of like judgment or you don't belong here. I'm like, excuse me, like, you know. So yeah, there's a lot of like prep, and there's a that has to go into me walking into these places. But it's also nice seeing, like I said, 12 of them. I started crying when I saw them. I was like, I couldn't believe it. I was so touched. And they're like, and you know, they're there to see you. Do you know what I mean? It's just crazy. And I've done that. I've created that connection. I've brought these girls to come here. Like, obviously, I don't know them, but I'm saying they're coming there because of me. This is what, like, integration, representation, like, you know what I mean? This is what it's about. So, like, for me, it's you know, it's a big thing. It's a bit, I'm, you know, yeah, it's big. It's big. And I like it. I like, people do want to talk afterwards, and I like it. And I always give people time, and I always say, do you want a picture? And they're like, oh no, who do you think you are? Fucking The Rock. And I'm like, bruv.
No, I'm the
Like,
Maroc. I'm the Maroc.
exactly. So I just, but I always ask, because I'm like, oh, you've spoken to me, so I have to give you something back. So I'm doing my mum. I'm like, I've left my mum's soup at home, unfortunately. So let me give you a picture. And they're like, no. I'm like, okay. And then,
With those young women, you say, like, who came into a bar to see you. Did you speak to any of them after the gig? Did they come?
yeah, they stayed, and I was like, oh my God, because I spoke to them when I'm on stage as well. Like, if I see hijabis in the audience, I'm like, oh, I said, look, I said, you see all these hijabis? I said, you invite one, me, and they all fucking turn up. And then they were like, so yeah, I'll pick on them a little bit, not just that. And then sometimes I throw a little joke to them and stuff like that. And yeah, and so acknowledging them while I'm on stage, and then talking to them afterwards, because I know how difficult it is to walk into a place like that.
I guess I hadn't really ever considered how difficult or uncomfortable people might be walking into those kind of places. And yeah, it that is amazing that you're breaking down that fear or that worry, that concern, because
Oh,
essentially
thank you.
you want everyone to come and share in it together, right? That's the point. Comedy's
Exactly.
communal, isn't it?
Exactly. And it brings people together. It's really nice. You see, you know, people turn up and they're like, I came all the way from this place. To the other day I did a gig up, it was in Chatham. Chatham, that's in Kent.
Kent.
Yeah. And someone had come down from somewhere ridiculous, like, I don't know, Sheffield or something. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, you know, it wasn't to just to see me, because it was a special night. It was called Arabs Are Not Funny. So all the acts on there have some sort of Arab connection. But all the actors in it are in English, and it was so, there were so many local people there as well. I was shocked. I was touched that all these local people had come from the community to support the night, as well as people coming from so far away. It was so nice, and like what you said, it brings people together and just breaks barriers and forges connections as well. Like if you know, I get people coming up to me who are not, you know, hijabis or Muslims or whatever, coming up to me saying, "Oh, listen, you know, that I really enjoyed that, or that was funny. I like this joke or whatever." And then you're like, you might not have any Muslim friends. You might have never met a Muslim. You might have never spoken to a Muslim, but here you are talking to someone. And this is where you can break down hate and like misconceptions and fucking Daily Mail bollocks. Do you know what I mean? Like all that kind of stuff. This is where you break it down. You know what I mean? And then open people's eyes a bit.
That's amazing.
There's a lot of responsibility for me. I'm not just, it's not just comedy. I'm representing, I'm doing all these things. There's a lot, 100%. And sometimes I have to remind myself, I'm like, you are a comedian. You're here to make people laugh. Everything that happens outside of that is a extra and is a blessing. But other than that, I'm here. This is what I do, make people laugh. Because sometimes it gets, can get overwhelming. So
Can it?
yeah, definitely. It's a big responsibility. Sometimes I feel like Spider-Man, you know, like with great power comes great responsibility. Because that's another thing. Like sometimes, like as you see, I'll be swearing and stuff like that. So sometimes the Muslim community doesn't like that. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not just a Muslim. Like I do have a personality. I am these other things. And this is how it comes across. Also, when Muslim men do it, I don't see you saying shit. So other Muslim comedian, male comedians, you don't say shit. So don't ever say shit to me. Because I will bat back, like I ain't gonna, you know what I mean? That kind of thing. So
Can
yeah.
you, by the way, can you, would you ever consider a Spider-Man or Spider-Girl hijab? Is that a thing? Could you do that? Would that be?
Yeah, I would. Sometimes I theme my hijab. So once I did, I hosted a speed dating, Muslim speed dating event, and I got a hijab with hearts on it. So like, I do like to like feet. And when I was doing the Outsiders, I had one that was really leafy and stuff. So like, yeah. So like, and I had another one, a green one that had all flowers on it. So I do like to match. Sometimes I like a chameleon. I can just fit
Yes,
in.
particularly on
Like,
outsiders. So you're in the forests, you got to blend in just in case. Because I know Darren Harriott, who's in it as well. He wears like a camouflage poncho quite a
yeah.
lot. So like, I don't know what anyone was expect. I don't know what he was expecting. I don't know what like going hunting for deer or something. But obviously that is not it. Speaking of Spider-Man, you mentioned Rush Hour as well. What are the influences on the film, on this biopic of yours, Between Morocco and a Hard Place? What are the influences on this film from film or TV or literature or comics or theatre? Are there any other ones, or is it straight down line action comedy influence? If it's just
It's
straight out, but I
actually,
mean, if it's just going to be Tango and Cash all the way, I'm very
yes.
happy with that. Everyone will be happy with that. We don't have enough Tango and Cash orientated films these days, as far as I'm concerned.
Yes, no, I think just that, like
Beautiful.
action, yeah,
Beautiful.
just Tango and Cash, Rush Hour, 100% of the
I've got
way.
to ask then, right? So if it's Tango and Cash, you and Melissa McCarthy, who's Kurt Russell? Who's like the Kurt Russell? Who's Sylvester Stallone? What's the
I think she should be Kurt Russell.
Really?
Okay, then let me be. I don't know. I feel selfish
It's
if
your film.
I take. Okay, let me be Kurt Russell because he's hilarious and
He is amazing. Just love him.
he's so good. Fubar. Do you remember Fubar? And then he's
Oh,
like,
yes, of course. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah.
what is it? Fucked up beyond
All
recognition.
recognition.
That's it. All recognition. I always forget that A. I'm like, why did they put that in there? But yeah, it's all recognition. So yeah, I'll be Kurt Russell.
And McCarthy's Stallone.
Yeah.
What about the critics factor here? If they love it or hate it, would that affect you on your next project? Does it affect you? Does criticism affect you?
Yeah, I think firstly, I wouldn't let their criticism affect me because we're going to have a sequel, obviously.
Obviously.
Like, do you know what I mean? Maybe even a prequel. Like,
I'm so
who
glad.
knows?
I don't think we've had a guest on yet talk about the sequel. I don't think we've ever had come on and say there's going to be a sequel, maybe or even a prequel. So I'm really pleased you've already got the franchise lined up.
Making money, mate. We're making money. So yeah, Obviously, art is subjective. All art is subjective, and obviously, comedy is an art. So, I don't mind people criticizing. I just don't want it to. I don't like it when it's nasty or personal, you know. So then, that's when I'm like, oh shit, I feel a criminal record coming on. Do you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. So yeah, that because there's loads of things I don't like. Like for example, I bloody hate dark chocolate. I think it tastes like chalk. Don't tell me you like dark chocolate.
I
Oh,
like
come
dark chocolate.
on. Oh no, what are you
I like dark
doing?
chocolate.
Dark chocolate is nasty. It tastes like chalk with more chalk. Like it's disgusting. So like I don't go to the supermarket and stand near the dark chocolate and go, this is shit. I don't. I just walk past it. Do you know what I'm saying? And this is what
Yes.
people need to learn to do. Okay, you shit, you don't like it, that's fine, but you don't have to tell everyone. You know, nobody will need, you're like, what, why is the purpose of
Yep.
you? You know what I mean? It's there's nastiness about it. So yeah.
How did you cope early on in your comedy career with critics or people doing reviews? Did you read them? Did you listen to them? Did they in any way impact you?
I don't think I've ever had a review because I've never done a show, like a six, so a solo show or anything like that. So I've never had a review. See, with comedy, the reaction is instant, and you get, you know, the feedback is instant. You see it on the faces of the audience and stuff like that. So I've had people be nasty, like sit in the front row and be like, just not like shaking their heads, going, "Oh, that's shit," yeah, and stuff like that. And then when I
Wow.
at the beginning, yeah. At the beginning, that really affected me. Like, one time I remember this guy done it, and he was sitting at the front, and he was a friend of another comedian. Now, the comedian was sitting next to him, and he saw him doing it, and he kept on saying to him, stop. But if that was me, like, if that was my friend, I'd drag him out. I'd be like, fuck off. I don't care if I've known you for 20 years. We are no longer friends. Like, you can't be coming there and doing that to my colleagues. You know what I mean? We're work colleagues. But he didn't do that. But that really upset me. And I was very new then. And then I stopped doing comedy for about a month. But now, yeah, you get shitheads in the audience, like hecklers and that, and I just shut them down and then carry on. And sometimes, yeah, this is what I mean, you know, all this stuff happens in a split second in your mind when you're on stage. So like in a split second, you're like, should I challenge them? Should I not? Sometimes you have to leave it because it's not worth it. It's going to take too much time. It's going to ruin the night. And you're always thinking about other people. How is this going to affect the audience and all that kind of stuff? So the short answer to your question is let's just pay them off. We're gonna make we'll make so much money from the little stacking babushka dolls. We just pay them off. Do you know what I'm
You and
saying?
Melissa
That's
McCarthy
it.
on the little together on the little dolls,
Yes.
just going.
Do you remember those pens that you used to get that have like women on them and then you press it and then the woman gets naked? It'll be like
No,
that
I
with a
do not
few.
remember them. I don't know what you're talking about.
So we can have
Huh?
like
Naked women on pens?
obviously we're not going to be naked, but you could turn the heads. So one head would be like, one side would be like Melissa McCarthy and the next side would be me.
That's good.
You see what I mean? Like
A bit of novelty stationery, I think, always
that.
wins people round. I'm certainly won round by that. That is a great bit of marketing. I'm into it. I'm really into it. Now, congratulations, by the way. The film's in the can. It's been made. The film's been made. Between a Rock and a Hard Place is coming out, and it's the premiere. But where would the premiere take place, and who's invited?
I wouldn't do it in Leicester Square because it just always smells of piss and vomit down there, isn't it? It's proper nasty, isn't it? I'm like, that red carpet is bollocks, mate. It smells of piss and shit. So what we do, honestly, it's disgusting. You can't cover it up. You know that saying, you can't polish your turd. You cannot polish Leicester Square. So that is the bottom line. So I'd like to have it somewhere like maybe where there's a castle or something. And then,
Wow.
yeah, I don't know nothing about castles, so I don't
Edinburgh
know, but
Castle, there's that's on the top.
maybe.
You've been to Edinburgh, you've played Edinburgh, you've got the castle.
No, I've never done Edinburgh. This is a I'm a proper virgin when it comes to like all these. I'm not a virgin. I've been married twice, do you know what I'm saying? But like, I'm a virgin in terms of all these things, so solo shows, but
Right, so okay,
virgin
so
no longer. I'm not going to be a virgin any longer as of February.
as of
That's when I'm doing
February.
my
Oh, of course. Yeah,
work in
that's when the debut
progress.
show begins, and we look forward to it. And we will be sitting in the front row, not shaking our heads, I hasten to add. We'll be cheering and applauding. So you need a castle. Okay. Windsor Castle, Edinburgh Castle.
Yes. Well, what about if we did it in something like a museum, you know, like Greenwich Museum, you know, like
what about Elephant and Castle?
Hell no. That place is mental. It's like oh my god. Have you like that place reminds me of Brixton. Have you ever been to Brixton?
Yeah.
I know that's like yeah, okay. What the hell is it's like they got all the mad people and just went, here you go. You can hear you like stay. Yeah, honestly. This woman comes up to me once and she's like, do you have a pound? I was like, no, don't scream it in my face. Why don't you have a pound? I'm like, listen, bitch, you best back up because I ain't playing with you, all right? Like, what is this? Mental. Another mental place is Peckham. Honestly, I was performing there and I come out the station. I wasn't even, you know, when you just do the past the barriers, I wasn't even on the main road. This geezer's like, do you want to buy a cat? I was like, I'm sorry. What the fuck do I look like to you? Andy from BBC like adventure thing. No, I don't want to buy. Where would I put it? I'm going to a gig. He's like, oh, so that's a no then. I'm like, yeah. Mad.
Where did you play in Peckham? Where were you playing in Peckham?
I've played the Bussy Rooftop.
Yes.
Do you know that? And then, another mad place. Because as soon as you go into there, there's no madness. It's like you're in Shoreditch or something.
Yeah.
It completely changes. And then there's a bar, it's in the station. There's a jazz bar just there in the station. So yeah, I did that one. I threatened, I called the whole audience the C word. I was like, you're all C's, the lawyers. And they were like, what the hell? There's about 12 of them. I was like, the lot. And then like, there's about 3 pensioners. They were like, hey? I was like, yeah, you're a C, brother, C.
Right, so none of these people are invited to the premiere. Who is coming to the premiere?
I was going to say Lady Gaga. She'd come with some mad shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like a chariot made of Twix or something like that. You know what I mean? She's mental. So she'd do something like that. But then I wouldn't want her to detract. But then I don't mind because I feel shy doing all these like red carpety things. Do you know what I mean? When they're like, oh, Fatia, can we take a picture? I'm like... And they're like, can you smile? And I'm like, I'm smiling. So yeah, they don't like that. So I think I would like to invite all bad bitches. That's what I would say.
All
so
bad
like,
bitches invited.
Yeah.
And who isn't invited? Sorry, go on.
Who isn't? Yeah, no, I know, I was just gonna say all bad bitches. So like Michaela Cole, we'd invite her, like just what's her name? Maxine Peak, she's a bad bitch, like a good bad. Obviously, they're all good bad bitches.
Yeah.
You know what's her name? Vicky McClure, is it?
Yes. Like Line of Duty.
Yeah. That's it. All these bad bitches, we're gonna invite them. I was gonna say let's invite Sade because she doesn't. She's retired, but let's get her out of retirement. Sade out.
That's a nice invite. That'd be nice to have her there, wouldn't it? We don't see a lot of her these days.
No, exactly. She's
that'd be nice.
Still got a great Cher, invite Cher. Oh my god. And then I would do her, you know, she does her song, Do You Believe in Life After Love? You know, she does that thing with her hair. She flips it. That's what I would do. With my hijab. I'd be like, look, Cher, look at me. And she'll be like, who the fuck are you? Flicking my hijab about. Oh, what's Tiffany Haddish as well?
Tiffany, these are
Regina Hall, all those lovely women. So yeah, it would be like a real celebration of like bad bitches.
A celebration of bad bitches. That is,
yeah.
As a tagline goes, who doesn't want to go to that party?
Exactly.
And who's not invited? And why? Oh, yeah,
who's not invited? So I was thinking, like, so we wouldn't invite. You know what person comes to mind? I hope I never meet him because I'd have to explain this. But Henry, is it Canville? Is that his name?
Is it Henry Cavill, the plays Superman?
Yeah, because I think he's left. I don't watch The Witcher, right? I don't watch it. I don't watch none of that Games of Thrones bollocks and all that, right? But like, he's just left The Witcher, and I think a lot of people are upset. So I would not invite him because I don't want people to be upset.
They're an incredibly obscure reason to not invite someone for a show you don't watch. Someone you're not actually that interested in.
No. Do you know who I would invite?
I would invite
Elon Musk. All right. I would invite him, yeah. I would, but do you know what? That would be the last time you would ever see him. Do you see what I'm saying? So I would be doing the world a favor. And then before I'd do that. I would make sure I'd get all his passwords to Twitter, and then I'd fucking give it back to the people around.
This is not just a premiere, it's a heist, which has
Exactly.
a thrilling edge to it. Has a really thrilling edge to it.
Can we have Keanu Reeves as well? Sorry, Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves,
He's
now
the
there's a
best.
person.
Yeah. He's so nice, isn't it? He never has anything. He always says the right thing. He behaves well. He's never had like controversy apart from his accident where he broke himself up. But like, yeah, he seems like such a nice guy. And The Matrix is one of my favorite films as well.
Is it?
Yeah, he's the best. I love him.
I would be personally devastated if anything bad came out to light about Keanu Reeves, because he's had such tragedy in his life, losing his
Yeah.
partner, and I think he lost a child, and he's lost, family members. And he seems, like you
Yes.
say, seems such a beacon of integrity and decency.
Yes,
And I
absolutely.
just think he's such a he just and I think he's a good actor. I think he's a good actor.
Yes, I agree. I agree with you. He is. I like. Have you ever seen Parenthood? That's a bit sad, but he's really good in that as well because he plays that kind of serious, but also naive, like a bit silly, like a bit dumb, like unintelligent. But he's not.
He's
He
not.
just comes across like that. He's really good in that. That's so. Another one like Steve Martin is one of my favorites as well. Like what's it? The Father of the Bride. He's done so many like really funny
Have you
movies
seen his
and.
early films, like The Jerk? Have you seen The Jerk?
No, is that good? Is
If
that the
you
one
like
with?
Steve Martin and you've never seen The Jerk, go and watch The Jerk today, or Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, or Man with Two Brains. Have you seen The Man with Two Brains?
No.
You are in for such a night. The Jerk, honestly, is one of the funniest films I think I've ever seen. It is, and he is proper Steve. He's like full tilt Steve Martin in that. I mean, he is in the other ones, but honestly, what
Yeah.
a night you've got lined up. So there we have it. Between Morocco and a Hard Place, featuring mayonnaise violence, Plowmans, Fatiha playing Fatiha, Melissa McCarthy, two buff Moroccan men, pair injury, being wrongfully detained by the police, a soup for brutality exchange policy, tango and cash, Daniel Craig, nursery toughness, and a celebration of bad bitches. Fatia El Ghori, congratulations on being greenlit.
Yeah. Now give me the money.